How did the expansion of colonial infrastructures like the railway impact the environment in India?
The most direct impact of the expansion of railways was on the forests in India. The wood was used from the timber of the trees in the forest to create or to make the what are known as sleepers. The second direct impact on the forests was for the fuel that was used on the railways. Instead of coal, wood was preferred because it was cheaper than coal and it was readily available. Also, the railway lines were laid on raised beds, which often interfered with the local drainage, and it created unwanted, you know, waterlogging and ponds that became breeding grounds for the malaria vectors, which were carried by the mosquitoes. In fact, one of the British medical agents who was in India during that time came to the conclusion that the railways were one of the major causes of malaria in India. Highly mobile nature of construction work, you find a lot of diseases were brought by the workers from distant parts, and the laborers often shuttled between colonial plantations, railway networks, you know, wherever the railway work sites were there, they were traveling there by trains. And these migrant laborers often went to work for months and years through these, you know, and they would carry the diseases with them.
What was the impact of railway construction specifically in the northwest of colonial India in the region?
Specifically, in the case of northwestern provinces, you find the harvesting of trees was done from the Himalayas because there were no local trees that would qualify for the sleepers, given that it's an arid region. For the firewood, they would obtain the wood from the plains, for the forests located in the plains, where you had different species such as, I can give you the botanical names, Prosopis spicigera is one species, there's Acacia modesta. It was calculated that because of the railway expansion that was going on at that time, especially in the 1860s, it was calculated that there were only 3 years' supply of fuel wood left in the Punjab. You know, the colonial records indicate that.
What are the sustained effects of the railway expansion that are tangible in India today?
Well, the forests are still scarred from the deforestation. When I visited some of those areas more recently or in the last few years, many of the deodar forests have not grown back. You know, these are forests that take a long period of time to regenerate. And these are old growth forests. And what the current government has done is they've engaged in what is known as social forestry, where they plant these quick growing species, which may not really support the biodiversity. So again, you have monocultures in the form of eucalyptus trees and other trees.
Can the approach of a decolonial ecology be applied to the context of India? If so, how or why not?
This decolonial framework assumes that prior to colonial rule, the human nature relationship was in equilibrium and that indigenous people never suffered from, were not subject to any kind of power relations, which is not true. Because before the colonial state, there were other states, right? There was always this power relation between the subaltern people and the dominant groups. It shifts the blame to colonialism/Western ideas, Western knowledge about nature, and does not actually critique the economic process, the actual economic process of capitalism that led to environmental degradation. If capitalism continues, it's in the way it is being rapacious on the environment and degrading the environment, then we can only come up with what are known as a spatial fix or technological fixes. Either you use technology to deal with an issue, or if there's environmental degradation in one place, you move to another place. That's a spatial fix.
How does the awareness of the colonial legacy regarding the environment, these historical implications, shape environmental policies and activism in India today?
We were talking about the Himalayas, the landslides, the erosion, etc., which can be traced back to the colonial, extraction of timber from the region. And this led to various, what you could call, unrest from the local people or resistance by the local people in the Himalayan region, known as the particular region is, I think, now in one of the provinces known as Uttaranchal in northwestern India. And there were forest movements led by peasants and during the colonial times, protesting against the forest department, denying people access to the forest resources, which were basically common property resources or CPR. The same kind of inspired by those movements, you find in the 1970s, there was the Chipko movement. You must have heard about it, where women, local women from the neighboring villages, basically were inspired by these movements in the past in the local area where people had protested against the colonial governments taking over of the forests and denying them access. Similarly, in the 1970s, these women began to hug the trees when the commercial logging company came to cut the trees. This kind of protests continue to happen, and they were effective in showing the state, the post-colonial state, that you have to take care about the livelihood of the people who were dependent on the forests and natural resources for their survival. It wasn't a question of luxury like you see in the global north. Many of these movements have led to a new forest policy being enacted. I think in 2006, they enacted the Forestry Act. Because previous to that, they were just following the colonial policies. But given these movements, there's been a recognition that the local people's rights must be respected. And they're the ones who have the knowledge of the local ecosystems. And that needs to be respected and taken into account for managing the environment.